Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What would you miss about Texas food if you moved away? When Lisa Fain left Houston at the age of 25 to live and work in New York City, she imagined the excitement and novelty of the Big Apple would be more than enough to keep her satisfied. But while she relished the sights and sounds of her newly adopted home, she found herself longing for the tastes of Texas that she'd almost taken for granted growing up. Frito pie, biscuits and gravy, refried beans, and really excellent gas station tacos. Having once ventured into New Jersey in the vain hope of tracking down a can of Rotel chili, Fain decided to learn to cook the foods that tasted like home, and in 2005, she began sharing her experiences on her critically acclaimed Homesick Texan blog. She's just put some of her favorite recipes into a new cookbook by the same name. Lisa, welcome to Think.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you didn't move to New York City, you're 25, you don't think you're going to miss home. What do you think the what was it about the food in particular that made you really long for that?
The thing about Texas food is, for me, was it just evoked all sorts of memories. You know, going to a Mexican restaurant with your friends and sitting on the patio and having queso and margaritas, or, you know, going to my grandma's farm and having chocolate pie. And all of these things I couldn't have in New York, you know, unless I made them myself. And at first I thought it was just like the specific enchiladas or, you know, chicken fried steak that I missed. But the more I cooked and the more I shared food and memories with both New Yorkers and my Texas friends in New York, we realized that the food was a conduit to home, mm-hmm. you know, where we were away from. So that's kind of what the food ended up symbolizing.
Do people in New York have a really skewed perspective on what Texas food might be?
Pretty much. I mean, they think of it. Well, the thing about their perception on Texas food, if they've never been to Texas, mm-hmm. is that the Tex-Mex in New York is awful. You know,
yeah,
it's just like
Velveeta and
at its most base. And you know, the worst, the best Tex-Mex in New York would be the worst Tex-Mex in Texas. So, you know, this is what they've eaten all their lives, thinking this is what we eat in Texas. So they all think it's just really awful. And so they were like, why would you be missing this food? It's really terrible. And so for me, a part of it was kind of an education program. Like, let me just show you really how good it can be. And so from there, that's how that all evolved and everything.
And you couldn't necessarily find the exact same ingredients that would be in any grocery store here.
That's true. You had mentioned Rotel at the beginning, and that was something that I couldn't find in any grocery store. And there was this, a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, there was this new international grocery store in New Jersey. And I read about it in the New York Times, and I really, really wanted Rotel. I mean, you know, my mom would send me care packages, or mm-hmm. when people came to visit, they'd give me Rotel. But, you know, everyone knows that you can't have, like, your classic queso without the Rotel. So I took the PATH train, which is, you know, public transportation in New Jersey, because I didn't have a car. And it turns out the big grocery store was about a mile away from the train station. And it was winter, and it was raining, but I was just, like, so determined. So I was walking along this freeway, you know, to this international grocery store, because I just knew that they would have Rotel. Unfortunately, I didn't call beforehand, and I get in there and they did not have any Rotel. So it was just this kind of like depressing, sad adventure. And actually you can find Rotel a little bit easier now in New York, but that was kind of like, you know, this one moment where I realized, you know, it really is different up there. So,
and when you decided to start blogging about it, I mean, who did you think would read your blog?
I thought my friends and my family. I mean, mm-hmm. I did not do this with any sort of grand plan.
Yeah.
I actually got pretty fortunate with the name Homesick Texan because, mm-hmm. you know, it actually it means something instead of like Lisa's Kitchen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I think, you know, the way the internet works, because I had such a good name that, you know, it started appearing in Google searches and, you know, people started seeing, you know, the recipes and things like that. And also with food blogging, though, it's a very warm and welcoming community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people leave comments on other people's blogs. And even if they weren't from Texas, per se, you know, just they were attracted to, you know, the stories and the comfort food and things like that. And so that's just kind of how the audience grew. And then it also turns out that there are a lot of homesick Texans around the world, you know. And so, I mean, maybe if they plug that into Google or if they were looking for a recipe, they found it. So suddenly, you know, it was way beyond my friends and family. It was just all these people I had, you know, it was pretty exciting, actually.
I'm wondering if you heard from people on the blog about foods that you hadn't tried but thought, I have got to check that out next time I'm home.
Oh, absolutely. I'm trying to think. I get emails all the time.
Mm-hmm.
like, you know, because I grew up in Dallas and in Houston, mm-hmm. and then I spent some time in Austin. And so my when I moved to New York, my experience was pretty much limited to those three locations. Like, I hadn't spent much time in Marfa or El Paso. And one recipe that I haven't done on the blog yet, but I really want to do, is apparently in San Antonio, they do this hot dog, which is a hot dog and a corn tortilla and then deep fried. So it's kind of it's kind of like a flauta hot dog. Mm-hmm. And I never had heard of that. And so I asked some friends in San Antonio, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's huge. So it's things like that, just really specific regional things. Another thing was in the Midland Odessa area, there's something called asado, carne asado, which is a pork dish in kind of an ancho chili sauce. Mm. And the first time I visited a friend there, he was like, you got to get the carne asado. And I was like, carne asada, mm-hmm. which is, yeah. you know, the steak. And he goes, no, asado. And so that's what I love about Texas, is that it's just the cuisine here is just so rich and diverse. And, you know, it's just constant exploration and constant discoveries.
So I want to talk about this. You have a pretty vigorous defense of lard in this cookbook. First of all, talk about this before you tell us why. So many of us that would turn up our noses at lard and would never serve it to our kids will stick a big hunk of butter in the skillet before we start to saute something. What is it about lard that freaks us out?
I think because it's just straight pig fat. I mean, I think,
there's
you know,
that.
I mean, you know, it's just, it's kind of with butter, at least there's a process, you know, yeah. it's milk and you process it, mm-hmm. you know, but it's just rendered fat. And I think that just frightens people, but apparently it's no worse than butter, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, in terms of like saturated fats, and I can't remember the scientific stuff I spout, but I mean, and it doesn't, I think also another thing, people think it's going to taste like pig. Mm-hmm. And generally, it doesn't really, it has kind of a neutral flavor. But what it does, what it adds to things is texture. You know, like if you use lard and refried beans, that's how they get really nice and velvety. Mm-hmm. Or when you fry in lard, it's just super crisp. And that's the thing. I mean, it's, you know, I know my great-grandparents use it. And my grandparents did until, you know, until I probably like the 40s or the 50s, and they really lived a long time eating this. So I don't.
But you're adamant. You have to buy from the butcher and have refrigerated, not the sort of snow capped lard that comes in the blue box in the store and has been there since this, you know, the Nixon administration.
Right. Because the thing about that is, again, I can't remember the scientific stuff I said, but basically the stuff that is shelf stable mm-hmm. has been injected with all sorts of horrible stuff. So it's not good anymore. What you want is pure fresh lard. I mean, you wouldn't buy butter on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And so you want your lard also to be fresh and refrigerated and not injected with weird stuff to make it shelf stable.
And you're not using lard for every dish. We should let people know it's not Lisa's lard cookbook.
No. I don't use it very often, but I do always keep some in my refrigerator.
Let's talk about biscuits. In this case, instead of shortening, you use butter.
That's true. I think it's well, the biscuit recipe predates my lard fascination, and I actually love the flavor that the butter adds to it. And I have made biscuits with lard. But I don't know. I mean, you know, the texture for me is pretty similar, but I prefer the butter. But I've actually caught in flack from people about that. They're like, you like lard and yet you use butter in your biscuits. I'm like, I know, but that's the way it goes.
And you've also made your own tortillas, which, you know, there's nothing like a homemade tortilla, but I have to have like a relative do it. It always seems like so much trouble.
That was a huge learning curve for me. It took me quite a while. You know, the first recipe I had, it didn't work. And the thing that I learned in making tortillas, flour tortillas, mm-hmm. is that you have to wait for the gluten to relax. So you really need to let the dough sit mm-hmm. for an hour and a half before you can roll them out. And then corn tortillas is less of a learning curve. But again, you know, in New York, you couldn't find good corn tortillas or good flour tortillas. So if you really wanted something to taste like home, you had to do it yourself.
Yeah, you write in here, like, if you've never had a tortilla except out of a plastic bag, you've never had a tortilla. And it's funny to me that anybody anywhere would eat those. They're awful.
Oh, I know. I know. Once you have fresh tortillas, even when I come back to Texas, you know, I much prefer making them. Unless, you know, like, I've gone to a store and I've seen them actually, you know, roll them out and put them in the bag warm and stuff. But that would never happen in New York.
I had to laugh because a lot of people come home, you know, to Dallas and they have to go to Whole Foods. And you make a beeline for Fiesta.
Yes. I love Fiesta. It's just, you know, even before I moved to New York, I loved Fiesta. It's just, you know, I mean, I've always just loved Mexican food and Tex-Mex and things like that. And that was the place that just had all these like exotic ingredients that,
yeah.
you know, I was talking to my uncle the other day and he was talking about, you know, like 15 years ago, it was really hard to find things like tomatillos and poblano chilies at mainstream Texas grocery stores. Mm-hmm. That's probably changed now. But back, you know, 15 years ago, you could go to Fiesta and find anything you could possibly want.
Yeah, and you can get like nopalitos and things that are not, you know, maybe once in a while in a specialty store.
Right, exactly. Or dried chilies, all these things that are becoming more mainstream in Texas, but back then weren't. And so that's, but it's very mainstream at Fiesta. So that's why I love it.
My guest this hour is food writer Lisa Fain. She is creator of the Homesick Texan blog and has a new cookbook out called The Homesick Texan Cookbook.
117 here at KERA 90.1. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening to this special edition of Think, Chris Boyd's interview with Lisa Fain, the author of Homesick Texan Cookbook. I'm Ann Bothwell. Good afternoon. I'm the director of Art and Seek. I'm joined here in the studio by Jeff Ramirez. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Ann. This is always a fascinating interview whenever we have the opportunity to play it, because Lisa Fain went off, left the state, and realized how important, what a vital role Texas food plays in our lives. And during this presentation of Think Best of Edition, it's the Spring Membership Campaign. If you'd like a copy of the Homesick Texan Cookbook, Lisa Fain's cookbook, make a contribution to support Think and KERA of $120, and we'd be glad to send you a copy of the book as the station's way of saying thank you for supporting public radio here in North Texas.
And, you know, Jeff, just listening to Lisa and Chris talking, it makes me think I'm not a native Texan, but I've lived here now for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And as Lisa was talking about her quest in the rain and the snow and on public transportation, going from New York to New Jersey in desperate search for Rotel tomatoes to make her queso.
I know, what a great story.
It made me realize, gosh, I have really become connected to the food here in Texas. I can't imagine a life without queso or a life without Rotel tomatoes, a life without Frito pie. And the great thing about having this cookbook, the Homesick Texan Cookbook, is that you never have to be in that position, because no matter where you live in the country or in the world, you will have great recipes that will put you right back in touch and in taste with Texas. So to get that cookbook, all you have to do is give us a call this afternoon, 1-888-694-6931, or online at kera.org. Make a contribution of $120, and you can choose the cookbook as your thank you gift.
Yeah, and I think we really like this cookbook because, let's see, it's nearly 350 pages long, exactly 349 pages. And, you know, chapter three, nearly 30 pages long. Chapter three is solely devoted to salsas, sauces, and gravies. So, you know, I have an idea here. Like, you put any of that salsa or sauces or gravies, any of those recipes on anything, can you make something taste Texas?
I think you can make it taste Texas. I think you could make pretty much any meat, any vegetable. Put a little sausage gravy on it.
And, there you go.
Tastes like home.
All right. A contribution of $120 or more. That's just $10 a month on the KERA Sustaining Membership Plan. We'd be glad to send you this book, Lisa Fain's book, The Homesick Texan Cookbook. And like we said at the beginning of the program, last time we aired this program during a fundraising drive, 80 listeners picked up this book. So we have total confidence that as many listeners or more will help out with a membership campaign right now, make a contribution, get yourself a copy of the book, because our goal today is to get under $200,000 left to raise, because that perfectly positions the team, listeners just like you, to close out the drive as soon as possible. 1-888-694-6931, or make your contribution online at kera.org.
And to get under $200,000 today, we need to hear from you. KERA needs to raise $35,651 to keep us on track to end this campaign as soon as possible. So now is the time. Now is the time for you to step up to the plate. And now is the time for you to think about doing some amazing cooking right there in your own home, or at least some fantasizing about great cooking when you flip through the pages of this cookbook. So now is the time to do that. Give us a call, 1-888-694-6931, online at kera.org. And again, a contribution of $120 will net you this great cookbook. But the important thing is, no matter what level you contribute at, whether you do it by phone, whether you do it online, the important thing is to show your support for the station right now.
You know, and raising $35,651 by the end of the day for the rest of the day is totally doable. You know, that's about half the money that was raised last Thursday. So it's not like this $35,000 to go before the end of the day to get the campaign to under $200,000 left to raise is, you know, out of reach. It's totally within reach, because that's half of
what
was raised.
We've done it before.
We've done it before, several times before. To make this happen, though, you need to step up. You stop waiting for someone else to call in. You're already listening to the station. Your participation is vital right now. We'll get there, but only with your help. So please do call right now, 1-888-694-6931, or make your contribution online right now at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is food writer Lisa Fain. She is creator of the Homesick Texan blog and has a new cookbook out called The Homesick Texan Cookbook. So I have to tell you, as a person who has been known to add chipotle powder to brownie batter, I was really excited to read your chili section. What chilies need to be in every Texan's pantry?
I would say, and you're talking about dried chilies or fresh chilies?
We'll start with dried.
I would say if you're going to have one dry chili in your pantry, have the ancho chili, because the ancho chili is kind of the base of the commercial chili powder that we all grew up with. I mean, the ancho chili is the flavor that you have in your bowl of red and in your chili gravy for your cheese enchiladas. So start with the ancho. And then the chipotle chili, which is, I guess, probably become more popular in the last 15 years, but that's a dried smoked jalapeno, and it's hot and it's smoky and it's just such a wonderful flavor. And then from there, you could use pasilla chilies, which is a dried chilaco, and it has kind of a bittersweet, earthy flavor. The guajillo chili, which is bright and berry-like, things like that. You can, you know, kind of experiment and go further out.
And you've done a guajillo jam, is that right?
Yes, I love to pair guajillo chilies with berries, and so I do a strawberry guajillo jam, which is really wonderful.
And do you use it in the same way that you'd use jam for anything else?
Oh, yeah.
It on biscuits or whatever?
Put it on your biscuits, anything, your toast, anything you want a sweet strawberry jam with.
You grew up with your grandmother canning things. Mm-hmm. People are really scared about this now, and they're afraid of the sterilization process and all that. Should we not be so frightened?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, the thing that's really cool about our great-grandmothers and our grandmothers is that they just did things. You know, and they just kind of knew, and they weren't so into the science and things like that. And so, you know, if you just use common sense, you know, you boil it long enough, the lid will stick, and then, you know, you'll hear the ping and you know you're done. And, you know, when I first started canning, I was all, you know, wanting my thermometer and things like that. And, you know, I watched her do it, and I just realized how just easy it really is. It's not anything to be scared of.
And the recipes here are for like 2-quart jars. You're not making enough to keep the family through a cold winter with nothing on the ground.
No, and that's just by virtue of the fact that I live in Manhattan. You know, my grandma lives on a farm, and I will watch her, you know, just go bucket after bucket with apples and, you know, all the things that she actually grows. And that is, you know, more of a preservation. For me, I agree. I mean, I note that it's kind of like a lark, you know, but I mean, you can just take these recipes, and if you do have bushels and bushels of whatever, you can, you know, multiply them and use the same recipes.
We have an email here from Steve in Dallas who, if he hasn't read the cookbook, maybe he's read the blog. He writes 2 words, bacon grease.
Oh. is that a statement or a question?
It's a question.
It's a question, like bacon grease with a question. Well, bacon grease is what's left over after you make bacon. Mm-hmm. It's that lovely oil, and it tastes like bacon. It's smoky. It's porky. And I save my bacon grease. Our ancestors, you know, used to keep it in a coffee can on the stove, but mm-hmm. I like to keep mine refrigerated. But basically, if I'm going to, you know, anything that I would use butter for, you could use bacon grease for in terms of skillet frying. I mean, mm-hmm. I wouldn't use it maybe in biscuits, but I love to like cook eggs in bacon grease, or I like to stir it into my refried beans, or even if I'm making like a chowder, I'll throw a little dollop in. Anytime you want to add like a little bacon flavor, that's what bacon grease is good for.
What's the secret to really good cream gravy?
The absolute secret is just take your time when you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the kind of thing that when I actually had to write a recipe for it, I really didn't know, because it was the thing I saw my mom doing when I was growing up, my dad making it, you know, my grandmother.
And did you think, just, like, there's no recipe for this?
I know. I mean, no, exactly. You know, she'd fry, you know, after chicken fried steak, you'd pour in the milk and, you know, stir it until, and put in a little bit of flour and add the black pepper, and it was done, you know. So mm-hmm. for me, it was like coming up with measurements. I think the secret is just to taste as you go, and, you know, just to use your eyes. You know, if it looks too thick, just add a little bit more milk and things like that.
I actually appreciate it. We don't eat meat at home, so I like that I had permission to try it with vegetable oil. Have you actually? I mean, I'm sure something about that taste is missing, but does it approximate?
I think if you use enough black pepper, uh-huh. and if you're going to use vegetable oil, I think, you know, you might want to add some garlic and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, at its purest state, you know, it's just the pan drippings and the flour and the milk and black pepper, but add enough salt. I think it'll be fine.
There is definitely a culture difference between Texas and New York. I remember when we moved from New York to Texas, I didn't know that gravy could be white, and you didn't know that gravy was often brown.
That is true. North. That is true. Actually, I was talking to some of Southern friends of mine who are from Georgia, and we've decided that the brown gravy, white gravy line is the Mississippi. So everything west of the Mississippi is white gravy, and everything east of the Mississippi's brown gravy, because I was in Alabama and I ordered the chicken fried steak and it came with brown gravy, and I was like, this is all wrong. But I mean, that's just how it's done. So
I want to quote you from the book here about chicken fried steak. Let's see. You write, the preparation of chicken fried steak is a violent, messy, and dangerous affair. But it's worth it, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. And I say that it's violent and messy because, well, I grew up.
Spits?
Yeah, well, when you actually pan fry it, it's pretty violent. But also, I grew up watching my dad like pound the steak, uh-huh. and he didn't use any wax paper or parchment paper or anything like that. He just took, you know, the meat tenderizer, you know, mm-hmm. the big metal mallet to the meat itself. And so the first time I made it, I did that, and there was like meat chunks flying everywhere. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is rather violent. So that's where that came from.
And is it really important that you choose the right cut of meat? I mean, the point of it, right, is sort of you take some cheap meat and you make it really good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to use, like, you know, top round, some tough steak or, you know, our cube steak. And what you want to do is take this tough meat, tenderize it with the meat tenderizer, and fry it. And the whole point is to make the tough meat palatable and flavorful. And the thing is, in New York, you know, I made chicken fried steak for some people, some New Yorkers, and they were like, wouldn't this be better with ribeye? Or, you know, and I was like, no, why would you want to do this to a ribeye? Yeah, you don't need to do anything to a ribeye, but this poor piece of meat needs, you know, some beating and some breading and frying, you know, to actually be good.
So we promised Jeff Whittington we would talk about brisket. And you've actually perfected doing it just in your oven.
I have. I've actually gotten some flack from some people who still live in Texas, and they're like, wait, you don't smoke your brisket? I'm like, well, no, because I live in Manhattan and I don't have a smoker, an outdoor space. But I mean, there, you know, you would never eat my brisket and think you're in Lockhart. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there is a very distinct sort of flavor and even texture you get from smoking your brisket. But I've made really, really, really wonderful oven briskets. And if you go into it knowing that it's not smoked, you're going to love it.
Talk about the Dr. Pepper barbecue sauce.
Oh, Dr. Pepper and pork and chipotle chilies and a little bit of mustard. That's kind of what that recipe is. And Dr. Pepper just makes this great sweet base for a sauce. And it's fun to cook with Dr. Pepper. I mean, you know, it's a Texas thing. You know, we also like make Dr. Pepper cake and that's just kind of the evolution of that. That's where that came from.
Now, is that something that the rest of the country knows is a Texas pride sweetened beverage? I mean, do people know that the origins of Dr. Pepper are here?
That's a good question. I think most people do. I think most people even know that it's from Waco. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, for the longest time, you couldn't even get Dr. Pepper up in the Northeast. I was talking to a gentleman who's a bit older than I am, and he moved there in the 70s. And, like, for me, going to New Jersey for Rotel, they used to make trips out to New Jersey because that was the only place where you could get Dr. Pepper back then. So, yeah. So that's it has been known as a regional beverage for quite a while until recently.
What's the difference between Texas cornbread and cornbread in other places?
Well, Texas cornbread is basically yellow cornmeal, buttermilk, eggs, maybe flour, maybe not, and bacon grease.
And no sugar.
And no sugar. Well, I was going to get to that. That's the thing. We do not put sugar in our cornbread. And that's almost across the South. But once you get above the Mason-Dixon line, they put so much sugar in it, and it just takes on this whole different sort of texture. It's like corn cake. It's not cornbread at all, and I'm not a fan of the sweetened cornbread.
So are you a crumbly cornbread person, or do you like it to have some moisture to it?
I like a little bit of moisture, but I do like it to crumble as well. I mean, I like to crumble it into beans, and I like to crumble it into buttermilk and things like that, so yeah.
Another thing you have in here is a reference to the fact that I think anyone who grew up in Texas went to the cafeteria with their grandparents at least, if not their own parents. And your grandfather's favorite was something called chess pie.
Yeah, chess pie. That's an old Southern dish, and it's basically just some. It's a custard pie. That's just sweetened with lemon juice, and it's just, you know, the eggs and the flour and things like that, and. When people have never had chess pie, they are like, what does it taste like? And I like to say, it tastes like pecan pie without the pecans.
Mm.
You know, so if you're really into that sort of buttery, creamy sort of, you know, filling, that's chess pie.
Hmm. Yeah, I had not heard of it before. And I
really?
Thought, does it look like a chessboard or I'm trying to figure it out? So sounds really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you also have a recipe in here for a lemon lavender. Is it a cake?
It's a quick bread.
Uh-huh.
And so... technically, you call it a bread, but I mean, the thing about quick breads is that they're basically cake batter in a bread loaf pan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cakey, it's cake-like, but the lemon bread was something that my Aunt Mary made, and it was kind of like what she was famous for, and it was just like a very simple lemon tea bread with this kind of like sugary, crackly lemon glaze on it. And what I decided to do, I had some lavender my mom had given me. And so I decided I love the combination of lemon and lavender. Mm-hmm. So I took this old recipe and then I put some lavender into it. It was wonderful.
Is your Aunt Mary the one who sort of drank and smoked? It's very wild.
Yes, she was. Yes. Rest in peace, Aunt Mary. She my family is religious, and she was. They were Baptist. And so they didn't drink or smoke or anything like that. And she liked to get a rise out of people by smoking and being salty.
We should say this cookbook is definitely, it appears to be designed to curl up with in addition to cook. You can have it out in the kitchen, but you could also sit there on an afternoon and drink a cup of coffee or something. Is that the kind of cookbook you like to read as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, a recipe is just a recipe. You know, it's just it's a method and a list of ingredients. And for me, what makes food exciting are the stories behind food. And that's what makes me want to go into the kitchen and make something. So.
My guest is food writer Lisa Fain. She's creator of the Homesick Texan blog and now the new Homesick Texan cookbook.
And Think is on your radio. The program will continue in just another couple of minutes. Chris Boyd interviewing. It's a very tasty interview with Lisa Fain.
It's making me hungry.
Exactly. Very delicious interview. This interview will continue in just another couple of minutes. But first, we're waiting for your call. We'd love to see you online with a contribution right now to support public radio here in North Texas. I'm Jeff Ramirez here with Ann Bothwell.
Hey, Jeff. You know, Think is really a guest-centered and topic-driven radio program. And this program expresses public radio's highest values with intelligent, insightful, and respectful conversations.
And so much of this program is driven by Chris Boyd's talent as an interviewer. Her interview style involves a regard and sincere respect for differences of opinions. Regular listeners, just like yourself, regular listeners to the program know that opinions are shared in a civil, respectful manner all the way through Think from beginning to start. Your contribution right now will help KERA maintain these high standards with programs like Think.
And today we're hearing Chris speak with Lisa Fain, the certified barbecue judge and the author of the Homesick Texan Cookbook. You know, in 2006, Fain started the blog Homesick Texan just to share Texan food with her fellow expatriates. She was living in New York at the time, but the site immediately connected with readers worldwide, both Texans and non-Texans. And now she has her first cookbook, and Fain is bringing the comfort of Texas home cooking to you.
And here's what's in the book: ribs with Sam Houston barbecue sauce, ancho chili shrimp quesadillas, chipotle sweet potato soup, and a whole chapter devoted to sweets, Texas sweets. How about that? It's, you know, looking at the table of contents here, and it looks like it's the longest chapter in this book, and it's nearly 350 pages long. Make a contribution right now of $120, or that's just $10 a month. And KERA will send you a copy, your very own copy, of the Homesick Texan Cookbook as our way of saying thank you for supporting public radio.
And we have goals throughout this membership campaign. Our goal right now is to get our total left to raise under $200,000. That is very doable today. We have just $35,201 left to go to set KERA up to end this spring membership campaign as soon as possible. But that's only going to happen. Really, you are in the driver's seat here. You are maintaining, you are in control. If you step up to the plate and make your contribution, then KERA is going to get there that much faster. And if you don't, it's going to take that much longer, because we will be here until we meet our goals. 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why we're aiming to get to under $200,000 left to raise today is, you know, once we get to around that much left to go on the overall financial goal for the campaign, things just seem to go faster, really. It's like listeners just like you who know that we're getting towards the end, that we're counting down those last hundreds of dollars left to raise, then call in or go online. Right now, this time of day is a great opportunity for you to take a few minutes to call the station or to fill out the membership form on your own. Either way, your contribution makes a difference. It is so important that KERA receive your support so that you're able to continue to enjoy programs like So we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see you online with a contribution right now. 1-888-694-6931 or online kera.org.
You know, not everybody listens to public radio, but those of us who do, we are all have one thing in common, and that is that we are hungry for news about the people and events of our world, and we want to make sense of what's going on around us. We want to hear the voices of the newsmakers, and sometimes we want to add our own voice to the discussion. We want to expand our reach in our understanding of complex issues.
So become a member right now. Join the station for the very first time after tuning in for, I think, for several months, maybe years now. You haven't already joined the station. Now's your opportunity to become a member for the very first time. You can also go ahead and renew your membership if it's that time of year for you. You can also make an additional gift on top of your current membership to support public radio right now. Call 1-888-694-6931 with your contribution.
And we've been talking about thank you gifts, especially the Lisa Fine's new cookbook, the Homesick Texan Cookbook, which can be yours for a gift of $120. But lots of folks have called in and gone online today and chosen their thank you gifts. Who knows what they chose? Mm-hmm. The important thing is we do want to say thank you. Thank you, Teresa Roberson of Fort Worth, John and Becky Heath of Carrollton, Osama Elsfaldi of Plano, and James McGill of Irving. Thank you so much for your support of KERA. Thanks for making this spring membership campaign a success. thank you for going online at kera.org or for picking up the phone 1-888-694-6931 and making your contribution.
All right, back to the interview with Lisa Fain here on Think in just about 45 seconds. But to remind you, Lisa Fain is a certified barbecue judge and the author of the Homesick Texan Cookbook. With your contribution of $120 right now, that's just $10 a month on the KERA Sustaining Membership Plan, we'd be glad to send you your very own copy of the Homesick Texan Cookbook. Check these out, recipes for ribs with Sam Houston barbecue sauce, ancho chili shrimp quesadillas,
yum,
chipotle sweet potato soup. You can check out the book online at kera.org when you make your contribution for $120 to support public radio here in North Texas. Thanks so much.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is food writer Lisa Fain. She created the Homesick Texan blog and is the author of the brand new Homesick Texan cookbook. Let's go to the phones now, and we have Nancy on the line in McKinney. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying hello.
Okay, I'm loving everything I'm hearing on this show. She sounds like she cooks the same way I do. I don't like sweet cornbread. And I cook my hash browns in bacon grease. But I do want to talk a little further about bacon grease, because whenever I bake a pie, I always choose my fat based on the kind of pie it is. And I wonder if you've ever made a pie crust with bacon grease, like for a quiche.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. And, you know, I haven't. I tried to make tortillas once with bacon grease, and I didn't like the way they turned out. But I think... Do you use lard for your pie crust at all?
Buy pork back from an organic farmer that I buy all my meat from, and I render the lard myself.
Mm-hmm.
My pie crust is delicious when I use that. I mean, mm-hmm. It's really great.
Mm. I think what I would do is I might not use 100% bacon grease. I might use maybe like 2/3 lard and 1/3 bacon grease, so you get the flavor. But because there are some textural things, like I discovered with the tortillas, I don't know if it would turn out 100% proper if you use 100% bacon grease. But I would definitely experiment with it and see how, because I think it would make a wonderful flavor, add for a wonderful flavor.
I was really impressed that you've made your own sopapillas. I thought they only existed in restaurants.
Well, again, it was just like, you know, the mother of invention is necessity. And in New York, you could not find sopapillas anywhere. So I had to start making them. And it's the kind of thing that, yeah, people were very impressed by that. They were like, whoa, you can make sopapillas? And once you start making them, I mean, the hardest part is waiting for the yeast-based dough to rise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you start throwing the dough into the hot oil, it's like magic seeing them puff up, and they taste just so good.
Did you have any thought to adding any sort of state fair food to this cookbook?
The thing about me is I'm
it's
a traditionalist.
Okay to say no.
No, well, the thing about me is I'm a traditionalist, and for me, the state fair is the corny dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only in like the last 10 years that all this other stuff's come about.
Yeah.
You know, the competitions, yeah, and all the crazy food. And I actually do have a corny dog recipe on my blog. And I thought about putting it in the book, but it just became one of those things where I just ran out of space.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be in the next book. But I mean, I do have fried pies, and I discuss, you know, kind of the whole fried food culture of Texas. But yeah, no, I won't have the other weird stuff on there. Fried bubblegum. I don't even know what that is.
I don't think it's a food. So
no.
You don't need to worry about it. Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. This time we have Holly on the line in Arlington. Hello, Holly.
Hi. I had a question about regional preparation of chili. I'm born and raised in Texas, and I was taught you put cornbread in your chili, but my stepmom, who's from Baltimore, puts rice in her chili. And I'm just wondering, is that because she's crazy, or is that like the Northeast regional thing to do?
You know, That must be a Baltimore thing, because I know New Yorkers and they don't put rice in their chili. But then you have people in Cincinnati that put pasta in their chili. So I think people like to mix some sort of, you know, grain-based thing with their chili.
That's like goulash. That's
yeah,
what we called it.
Yeah, you know, add some heft to it. So in Texas, we do cornbread or maybe some, you know, Fritos or Frito pie or tortilla chips. But yes, chili is very regional. And so that would make sense.
And Texas chili, proper Texas chili, is not supposed to have beans in it, is that right?
No, that's true.
Are people surprised by that? Like, do they think of chili with, you know, kidney beans in it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times when I would make my chili for the non-Texans, that would be the first thing they'd say. They'd be poking around in the bowl. Where are the beans? Where are the beans? I'm like, we don't do that. You know, you can serve beans on the side, but... I think I read somewhere, I think maybe it was James Michener, and I don't, you know, he wasn't a Texan, but he wrote about Texas in his book, Texas. And I think in that book, he talked about how the origin of that is that a bowl of beans is a proper dish and a bowl of chili is a proper dish. And putting the two together kind of disrespects both. So I'll go with that.
Let's go back to the phones now. I am really tickled by the fact that we have people really fascinated with this bacon fat question. We have Kristen on the line in Garland. Hey, Kristen.
Hi. I have a question about replacing bacon fat, actually. I know that's thin around here, but most of them are trying to eat a little bit better. And we have a dish that is kale and white beans, and the entire fat and oil content of this recipe is from crisping out, you know, rendering the bacon and then using the bacon as a crisp topping. And I, for the life of me, cannot find a good alternative to using that.
What do you think, Lisa?
Because the turkey bacon doesn't have enough fat and it doesn't have the good flavor, and olive oil ends up being kind of bland.
Well, that's interesting, because I was going to suggest olive oil, but if you're looking, I mean, you're not going to get the exact same fat content from a vegetable oil. And I wouldn't even bother with turkey bacon because there's no fat. So what I would use is olive oil, but I would maybe chop up some chipotle chilies because they have the smoky flavor, or maybe use chipotle powder. Another thing you could use is pimenton, which is smoked paprika, if you don't want the heat. And it has a wonderful smoky flavor, because, I mean, what you're missing is probably the smoke. I think the olive oil will provide enough, you know, lusciousness if you use, you know, the amount till you get to that point. But I would definitely use chipotle or smoked pimenton, smoked paprika.
We should say you do have a queso recipe in here, but you don't, I guess a brick of Velveeta has not darkened your doorstep in a long time. So talk about what else we can use.
The thing about Velveeta is it is hard. I mean, it's not necessarily hard to find in New York City, but when you do find it, it's like the little 2-inch thing was like $15. It was crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. So for me, and also I was just curious, can you make a queso with non-Velveeta, with a non-processed cheese? And so what I do is I make kind of a bechamel sauce, and I use like Monterey Jack or cheddar, and if you go slowly enough, it'll melt. People will make it, and they'll be like, it's not like Velveeta. I'm like, well, no, it's not going to be 100% like Velveeta, but it works. Mm-hmm. And especially for readers that aren't in America, where they don't have access to Velveeta at all, or even American cheese, it's been a lifesaver.
Yeah, that's got to be interesting when you're writing for an audience, particularly on the blog, and you have no idea what corner of the world they're thinking about Texas cuisine from.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. And actually, when I started the blog, besides my family and friends that lived here, you know, my readers initially were non-Texans. But then I started hearing from Texans that were reading my blog. And at first I was like, well, you don't need to read my blog. You're there. But I mean, I think, you know, it's just people appreciate good food, good Texas food.
I want to talk about this because you give a special shout out to the taco stands at the gas stations, particularly on Buckner. And you have an opinion about the Fuel City versus Buckner Dallas taco stands. And talk a little bit about what your impressions have been.
Well, I think Fuel City, because it's so big and it's very impressive, and it's kind of right where I guess the line is between a dry county and a wet county. So there's a lot of liquor stores, and I think that's another, you know, there's always a lot of people in that part of town, and it's gotten a lot of press. You know, I think it was rated like the best taco in the state by Texas Monthly, so it has had, it's kind of a media darling. But there's a lot of great gas station tacos in Dallas, you know, on Buckner, and And I think a lot of them are even better than Fuel City. I think it's, you know, become maybe not a victim of its own success, but that's not the only place to get a gas station taco in Dallas.
So are you sort of a fearless trier of greasy spoons when you travel in Texas?
Oh, fearless? Absolutely. I'll eat anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell when you go into a place, if you just by the smells and the audience and or rather the patrons, you can just tell if a place is going to be good or not. And if there's enough people in there and, you know, you see a plate and it just looks good, I'll definitely try it. I'll try anything.
You and I talked about this a little before the show, but I'd love for the audience to know about this. All the photography in here is your own, which is very impressive because I don't know that I've met anyone else who's done a cookbook that did all the illustrations themselves. But you don't have a studio that you work in. You're working out of your apartment. Tell us a little bit about that.
I live in a one-bedroom apartment, and which is probably, if you live in Texas, if you live in Dallas, my one-bedroom apartment's probably about as big as your kitchen. and what I would do is, as I was developing the book, and also for the blog, I'll make something in my kitchen, but the light there isn't very good. And so I'll take the plate into my bedroom. So I shoot all the photographs for the book and the blog have been shot in my bedroom.
Do you have like a sheet of vinyl over your bedspread or something?
I actually have this stool that was made with old barnwood from one of our family farms. Mm. And what I do is I prop the plates up on that. And so it kind of looks like a table.
Well, Lisa Fain, it's been such a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I just want to know if the question about having, was it vinyl or plastic on Lisa's bed?
I think she said vinyl.
I don't think Chris had that in her script.
I think that may have just come to her at the last moment.
Yeah. I'm Jeff Ramirez here with Ann Bothwell.
And this is KERA, and you are listening to Think with Chris Boyd, a very special edition and interview with Lisa Fain, who, if you've been listening, you are probably like me and Jeff here in the studio, starting to just drool tiny little bit, thinking about all of the great food that they're talking about. You have heard us say, and we will say it again, there is still time for you to take advantage of this special offer if you call the station now during the spring membership campaign or go online to kera.org and make a contribution of $120, which is just $10 a month on our sustaining membership plan. You can choose as a thank you gift Lisa Fain's cookbook, The Homesick Texan Cookbook. And Jeff, some of these recipes, chipotle pimento cheese, coffee chipotle oven brisket, ancho cream corn. Sounds pretty good.
It sounds great. And you know, this Lisa Fain's book, Homesick Texan Cookbook, we've been talking about it for this last hour. When you make your contribution of $120 or more, we'd be glad to send you a copy of the book as our way of saying thank you. It looks like you know, somewhere around 20 listeners have already followed up and made a contribution to receive this book as the station's way of saying thank you. So we'd like to say thanks back to you for joining up, making a contribution this afternoon. David Patrick in Grapevine, thank you so much. Louis Beal in Richardson. Angie Perez, also in Richardson. And all in Dallas. We got Guillermo Casano, Lisa Gonzalez, and Julia McDonald, all in Dallas. Thank you so much for calling in or going online with your contribution this afternoon.
All of these folks are helping us get closer and closer to our goal to raise $34,306 today here at the station. That is going to keep the station on track to bring us to the conclusion of our spring membership campaign. But that is not going to happen without your support. Yes, it's your turn. Step up to the plate and give us a call. 1-888-694-6931. That's 1-888-694-6931, online at kera.org.
And again, Lisa Fain, the guest on this last hour, best of from the Think. Lisa is a certified barbecue judge. I want one of those certifications.
I do too. Where do you go to get certified as a barbecue judge?
We're going to go to Google and find that out.
We will.
Lisa Fain is also the author of the Homesick Texan Cookbook. Chris Boyd was just speaking with her for this last hour on that book. In 2006, Lisa started the blog Homesick Texan to share Texan food with fellow expatriates, and the site immediately connected with readers all over the world, Texan and non-Texan alike. Now she's got her first cookbook and a very compelling interview this last hour. We find find out that Lisa covers her bed in plastic, but take pictures of the food that you'll see pictures of in this book. And again, for your contribution of $120 or more, just $10 a month on the KERA Sustaining Membership Plan, we'd be glad to send the book to you as our way of saying thank you for supporting public radio today.
You know, this book may, this cookbook may not change your life, but KERA may change your life. It may have already. If you're just back to your desk right now, you're getting done with lunch, and you do a quick check of your email, and while you're on the computer, you click over to kera.org, and there it is, what is in store for you this afternoon. Or if you go on artandseek.org just after lunch, you will find the afternoon delight. What's in store for you today? The delight is that you may never know. A little story, some music, a dance video, maybe some animation, or maybe even an innovative idea. For a few minutes, you're engaged.
1-888-694-6931. Call that toll-free number to make your tax-deductible contribution to support public radio this afternoon. You can also make your donation online at kera.org. There is now just $33,946 left to raise to get under $200,000 to go by the end of the day. You know, a great way to take a couple of huge strides toward our goals right now is, how about join the station as a friend, using a friend's membership. A friend's membership contribution is $1,500 a year. When you join in at that level, you're recognized with invitations to special station events. You'll also get a tour of the radio station studios. And you can also choose to receive, in addition, 7,500 American Airlines Advantage miles. Learn more about joining up at the Friends level, $1,500 a year, only $125 a month on the Sustaining Membership Plan, when you call 1-888-694-6931.
And, you know, if you do become a friend, as Jeff said, so many special events that you will be invited to that will connect you more intimately to the station. If you are a fan of Chris Boyd, just recently, just in the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. Chris Boyd interviewed Diane Rehm, who was in town. Diane Rehm, the host of the Diane Rehm Show, which airs in the mornings on KERA. Chris Boyd and Diane Rehm, two great interviewers together, at an event that was just for the Friends of KERA. So that's just one example of the kind of special, intimate connections that you can develop when you become a friend at just $125 a month on the Sustaining Membership Plan. So that's a great option. But the important thing is for you to make a contribution to the station at whatever level you feel comfortable. And so many folks have done that today, and we definitely want to say thank you to them. Thank you, Lindsay Osborne of Plano and Jean Lattimore of Dallas. Thanks so much, Michael Pfeiffer of Arlington and Sarah Beers of Dallas. Thanks for your support of the station. John White and Naxia Frankies of Dallas, and I may have Naxia or Naxia, I apologize if I've mangled your name, but that does not lessen our appreciation for your support of KERA. And Jeff Acevedo of Hudson Oaks, thanks so much for calling or going online today. Thank you for becoming a member for the very first time, renewing your membership, or thank you if you have called in or gone online to make an additional gift during this spring membership campaign.
All right. Every contribution, every dollar makes a difference right now during this stage, in the stage we're in of the spring membership campaign. We are counting down right now. The goal for today is to get under $200,000 left to raise. To get there, still need to raise $33,706 to go. 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. Thanks.